News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.
Taoiseach Simon Harris has said it would be inappropriate for the United States to hit the pharmaceutical sector with tariffs while it was at the same time negotiating with the EU on its trade relationship. And Dan Mulhall, former ambassador for Ireland to the United States, joins us this morning. Dan, even if it was inappropriate, considering the level of flip-flopping that's happening on tariffs, it's hard to say that this isn't a distinct possibility.
Oh, anything's a possibility. Obviously, we're living in an unpredictable world where one man, President Trump, who feels he has a mandate to do X, Y and Z, and he's doing things that have not been done before, including obviously the recent tariff announcement and then the flip-flopping that's gone on since then. So, but one hopes, I mean, normally in a negotiation, you know, not even a trade negotiation, they're fairly arcane, but in any kind of negotiation, you would expect that one side of the negotiation would not change the terms of the arrangement during the negotiation. So I don't think that that the Taoiseach's point is unreasonable. Whether it prevails or not is another matter. But I'm sure that that will have been one of the issues that Maros Sefcovic will have raised yesterday with the Americans during his discussions in Washington, D.C.
Are we seeing, Dan, a slight pattern emerge? And I do think that there's an erraticism in everything he's doing. So I do say a slight pattern in that he threatens broad sweeping tariffs, huge tariffs, you know, it's playing sort of serious hardball with other countries. But then, for example, with China, he rolls back on the smartphones. With Ireland and the EU, he rolls back on pharma. Is that a tactic that is a pattern, or is there just no pattern in the craziness of all of this?
Well, look, I was there during the first Trump administration. I remember distinctly at that time, we didn't have the same level of activity that we have at the moment. It was a quieter time, even though at the time it seemed extraordinary the way we were, but it was quieter than it is today. But I do remember at one stage, he started threatening Canada and Mexico because he didn't like the NAFTA agreement that had been negotiated under the Clinton administration. And they had negotiations. And, you know, while there were some changes made, I don't think most people thought this was a fundamental change. There were some changes made in America's interest and advantage, to America's advantage. But ultimately, he came out and said, this is the greatest deal ever made. And there was a huge kind of hullabaloo about it. And everyone said, yeah, okay, yeah, that's good. And Canada and Mexico played along. And I'm hoping that's what will happen this time around as well, that he will look for an opportunity to declare victory. Now, there'll have to be some concessions made. And I dare say that Maros Sefcovic, whom I know from all, he's a very experienced diplomat and a member of the Commission now for the last 10 years, I think. Maros is an experienced guy, and the people around him are very experienced. The Commission is very good at doing trade negotiations, and they will, I'm sure, have put forward a number of tantalizing offers. Now, they may not all be welcome to us. Some of them might be in agriculture, for example, which we may not be happy about, but they will have put forward some things. But the problem is that ultimately, even the American negotiators will not know what they can sell to the president, right? I remember last time around again.
So you don't think that they've been fully briefed on what he... Maybe the man doesn't even know what he wants himself. Look, he's just trying to see what he can get.
Look, it's not the way that the system under Trump works. I mean, in normal times, you know, they go into negotiation having a very good idea of the bottom line, the red lines and so on. But because this administration is so much the personal administration of Donald J. Trump, I think it's... I remember, for example, when I was there, on another topic, I was talking to a senior person in the State Department who was actually very close to Trump, and he was negotiating on a certain issue. And he said to me, look, he said, here's what I'm aiming to achieve, but I'm not sure how the president will go. And in the end, he did work out a scheme and the president rejected it, you know.
Okay.
So that's the possibility this time around. So those negotiators are in a very difficult position.
I'm sure. And it's hard to know whether or not, even if you agreed something, he would follow, that he would, you know, follow through on it. He could change his mind. There's all of that kind of stuff. There's some suggestion that the US position is to try and get the EU to sort of decide between its trading relationship with the US and China, to sort of pick one. Is that a sense that you get from all of this?
Well, that was a sense that was very definitely the case when I was in Washington during the first Trump administration, there was a strong press for the EU to be more, you know, to be more negative about China, and the EU did respond by bringing in these investment rules to you know, to vet investments from China to make sure they weren't going to undermine any vital European interests. So that could be this. But by the way, that's a double-edged sword, because the European Union you could always hint at the possibility of a pivot towards China.
Yeah,
should the United States you know, decide to pay hard.
Who might be somewhat more consistent than the current?
Look, in the past, the biggest hurdle to that sort of thing would have been, oh, we don't want to alienate the United States on the security side because we value NATO so much. But these days, the security side has also gone very rocky. So I think the odds are a bit more complicated now than they were. I mean, you know, 8 years ago, obviously NATO was vitally important and keeping America engaged in Europe was vitally important. But now that Europeans are looking more towards a future in which they may have to look after their own security, I think that overwhelming security argument of the past is no longer there to the same extent.
Can I ask you last question, Dan, just with regard to services? Obviously these tariffs are currently being placed on a variety of goods, the steel, the aluminium, the car, you know, all of those sort of individual goods, and then blanket tariffs as well. But services are currently excluded. If services are included by the EU, for example, that does change the playing field. For example, if we include services here in Ireland, we then run a deficit, not a surplus, with the US. And in the 1.7 trillion annual sort of trade that happens between the US and the EU, there's only a 50 billion surplus in terms of that if we include services. How big of a game changer would tariffs on services be?
I hate harking back to my time there during the first Trump administration, but I remember having these arguments with the people, the senior people from the U.S. Trade Representative Office, who are the people who do negotiations on trade deals. And I remember pointing this out to them, and it was very difficult to get them to accept the idea that services were equal in value to goods trade, because they said, the president only has an interest in things that are made by Americans and so forth. And I kept saying, look, I mean, the jobs and services are in some ways more valuable than the jobs you have in manufacturing, because they tend to pay more. So there was an obsession at that time. I think that's probably still there within the Trump orbit and for Trump himself, with things that are made rather than things that are.
But Dan, if we in the EU put reciprocal tariffs on the reciprocal tariffs on services, is that a good thing or a bad thing for Ireland?
Well, look, I think the first thing has to be to try to kind of in these negotiations to make that case, to have the Americans recognize that services are part of the equation. I mean, obviously, because they have a surplus in services, it would make sense for the EU at least to threaten to put some kind of barriers in the way of American services being sold in Europe, which might actually soften the American position somewhat. But that's a matter really for the negotiators to determine. But I would say that this all comes down to political will. If the political will is there, this issue can be resolved and the Americans can get a better trading deal with the European Union. But the political will has to be there. If it's not there, no amount of jiggery-pokery will make any difference.
Look, thank you very much for joining us, Dan. That's Dan Mulhall, their former ambassador for Ireland to the United States.
News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.